Welcome to the AA Grapevine, the magazine of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Vicki Duke, and I'm your volunteer broadcaster, bringing to you today part one of the June 2025 issue. It is the annual prison issue, and this month's featured section includes AA members inside and out of prison walls who share powerful stories of service, sponsorship, and surrender. The first story, To Be Trusted, by Mark S. of British Columbia. AA first found me in 1990 when I was still very lost and confused. It would be many years before I began to find myself. I had no life goals or direction. I lived to drink and party, holding jobs only to provide the resources to continue that lifestyle. I went to my first AA meeting voluntarily, though I believed in some form of a higher power. I didn't think about it much then. As soon as I heard the word God at that first meeting, it confirmed my suspicions that AA was some sort of cult. The people at the meeting were getting along too well. To me, they seemed almost phony and superficial. They were too friendly. I felt like an outsider, out of place, so I left. A year later, I started going to meetings again, but this time by mandatory court order. Even then, I started forging signatures on the attendance forms for my probation officer. In hindsight, I see that God had plans for me I could never have predicted and certainly didn't want at the time. I ended up going to prison for the first time. That's where AA found me again. A few weeks before I attended my first prison meeting, God revealed the reality of His existence to me. It's clear to me now that He used AA to draw me closer to Him. That's why taking the second step was not a stretch for me. I got a small taste of the 12-step program and AA fellowship there. Sadly, it was only a small taste. The very day I got released, the lie or denial or whatever you want to call it took me over. I think the phrase is self-will run riot. Why does the truth for me always have to come after the fact? I mean, why do I have to screw up first to learn my lessons? Today, I'm grateful that learning comes at all, even though it's been a long, drawn-out process and continues to be. I have learned a lot about myself, my problems, and my strengths outside of just drinking. It took about 15 years and more incarceration. I'm now serving a life sentence for it to really hit home that I have a problem with alcohol I cannot fix on my own. I'm sober now, and I pray that this is my rock bottom. But you never know. This is why I must take life a day at a time, and I must be routinely reminded that I'm only one drink away from an even lower, harder bottom. The worst thing of all is how much harm I caused along the way. I've hurt so many people, including myself. Although I've been through the steps 3 or 4 times in here now, I still feel guilt-ridden sometimes. But at least the guilt and shame are manageable today. I'm sober now 17 years. Not coincidentally, that's exactly how long I've been incarcerated this time. I love the feeling of sobriety. In large part, it's thanks to my higher power working through AA in prison that I maintain it. I want to thank some very dedicated and generous AA members from outside who volunteered to visit us here in prison. I hope we inside members never take these people for granted. It's by their own choice that they come here. They are trusted by the facility, a miracle in itself, to interact with us in person. We benefit immeasurably by their service work. One man's commitment in particular has enabled me today to go on passes outside the fence. Without fail, he and occasionally another man pick two of us up weekly at the front gate and take us to speak at a great men's meeting in town. What a gift. I'm a lifer, and I can't tell you how much these passes mean to me. Do you know how good it feels to be trusted this much? Do you know how good it feels to be shown so much compassion with no judgment? I zealously protect and honor the responsibility of getting to set an example for other lifers. Because of AA, I have the privilege of proving to the authorities that there's real hope for us. Not only can we make amends to our victims, at least in the best way we can, but we can also be of use to our community. I'm not just an old ex-drunk. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic, much wiser today. Because of AA and my higher power, today I have more than a taste of sobriety. I have a good sense of what serenity feels like. It's not physical freedom, it's inner freedom. And that's the end of that story. The title of the next story is I Want What She Has by Terry T. of Billings, Montana. The joy outside volunteers brought into prison and the support her sober roommate got was the thing that got her attention. I returned to prison for the third time in March of 2011. I never was very good at learning my lessons the first time. I was 43 years old and had been serving time either locked up in women's prison, in community corrections, or on state supervision since I was 21. Every time I got released from a facility, I would go back to the bottle. My return to institutions came faster each time. I had been lying about my drinking and using for so long that even I believed the lie that I didn't have a problem. Oblivious to the consequences my drinking caused, I thought I was just unlucky and claimed I was being targeted by the Department of Corrections. Alcohol was the only solution I had to living then. I couldn't imagine what life would be like without the ease and comfort I found in a bottle. I spent so much time and energy hiding my drinking because it seemed the only way to survive. When I did get locked up, I would turn to a concoction of psychiatric medications to alter how I felt. I really thought I couldn't live life sober. I had to alter my perception and fill that giant hole in my heart. I was fueled with fear and anger. By this time, when I got locked up, something was different. I knew in my core being of my being that if I didn't do something, if I didn't change, I was going to die. I got on my knees and asked God for help. However, going to prison again was not exactly the help I had in mind. Luckily, at this women's prison, there was an in-house AA meeting on Monday nights. At my first meeting there, I watched these outside women, volunteers, as they arrived and walked into our day room. They appeared to be so happy. Their cheerfulness didn't seem forced or fake. It was one of the first real things I can remember that night. I did not want to participate in the meeting because that would mean I had to admit I had a problem. And then that would mean I wouldn't be able to drink when I got out. So I just watched, and I continued watching these AA women every week for 18 months. My roommate's name was Casey, and she was a member of the group. She had been going to AA meetings on the outside before she was sentenced, and her sponsor wrote her letters and visited the prison once a week. I was lucky to get mail once a month, while Casey had an entire AA community supporting her. I found myself longing to be part of what she had, but my fear and pride wouldn't let me ask her how she did it, because I was afraid what she did wouldn't work for me. I was not willing to let my deepest, darkest secret out. I still couldn't fathom a life without drinking. Casey never preached to me or thumped her big book at me. She just walked around every day with a dignity and grace I had a hard time understanding. She told me many stories about herself and what had happened to her. She told me she was free on the inside, even here in prison. I watched her and her sponsor going through the big book in the chapel. I found myself feeling jealous over the joy she had. She had something I wanted so deeply, but I was so afraid to ask for it. Not long after that, I was moved to a community corrections program, and luckily, a few months later, Casey was transferred to the same facility. A few days later, I met Mo, who would become my first real sponsor. When Mo sat down across the table from me and started telling me about her drinking and her thinking, I was able to completely relate for one of the first times in my life. I now knew I was an alcoholic and was convinced there was hope for me. Mo's life sounded better than mine did. She had the things I silently dreamed about. Her relationship with her kids had been restored. She had worked at the same job for a couple of years. Her bills were paid, and she was content with her life. I had never felt content with anything. I was willing to do anything Mo suggested. Soon, my life started to get better. I began to find hope. The secrets that I had buried deep inside were no longer wounds to drink over, but became stepping stones to healing. I would have never received the miracle of AA if it had been forced upon me. Stubborn defiance would have kept me out of the rooms. It was attraction, not promotion, that worked for me. I'm so grateful for the women who led me to AA, to the women who came before me, and to the women I now get to help. And that's the end of that story. On to the next story, The Day Hope Arrived, by Jeffrey W. Oliver, British Columbia. Locked up, sick and detoxing, he was looking for something to read to cheer him up. What he found was a new life. It's pretty easy to drink in jail. When I was inside, guys would walk around with homemade brew in their coffee mugs. The guards would just look the other way as long as no one caused too much trouble. I wasn't one of those jail drinkers, though. Luckily, being locked up is where my life in sobriety began. I had my first drink when I was 13, and all I can say is that it felt like my entire soul took a deep breath. Suddenly, life wasn't weird anymore, and I didn't feel like an outcast. My friends and I managed to score some beer, and we went to a party. while all the other teenagers were either passed out or had gone home, I rummaged around collecting the leftover dregs because I already knew I never wanted to be without booze. I liked it so much that I spent the next 30 years making sure I never ran out. And if I did, I'd drink a bottle of vanilla flavoring, cooking wine, or anything else with alcohol in it. Despite my drinking, I managed to run a successful business. I owned a franchise and won awards, but in the end, I drank that business and my marriage away. On paper, I had been a millionaire. Now, I was reduced to living in a dumpy bachelor pad surrounded by empties. I was always insanely drunk, ripping through lives and hurting the people I loved the most. Before long, I found myself locked up behind bars. It was 2022. The pandemic was over, but apparently the OCC, Okanagan Correctional Center, didn't get the memo. I was strip searched and placed in solitary in a 6x8-foot cell for 23 hours a day to quarantine before I was released to the general population. I was very sick, sweating, shaking, a detoxing mess. For 1 hour a day, I was allowed out of my cell to walk around what looked like a basketball court and to shower. One day I walked by a bookshelf and picked up a magazine. I thought it was the Reader's Digest and wanted to read the jokes in it. When I started flipping through it, I was surprised that all the stories were about alcoholics. Turns out it was Grapevine. I didn't know anything about AA at the time. I also grabbed another book from the shelf thinking it might be a novel. This one turned out to be a big book. When I saw the word alcoholics on the cover, I tossed it on the floor. I had been called an alcoholic enough times by my ex-wife, among others, and I didn't want to see or hear that word again. I tried several times with my trembling hand to put the book back on the shelf, but every time it fell to the floor. Frustrated, I grabbed it along with two grapevines, and that's how I wound up with AA in my cell. I spent the next 7 days pacing back and forth in my cell, devouring that big book and those grapevines. I read the big book cover to cover and related to every word. The doctor's opinion made so much sense to me that what I had was an allergy. I finally understood the mania and the phenomenon of craving. I was completely alone and had never been so sick in my life. The grapevines were my medicine. I was sweating and crying and shaking. I'd roll up the magazines and hug them to my chest while I was writhing on the floor. Between my tears and sweat, the once brand new magazines started falling apart, with the pages smudged and smeared. I knew AA was a 12-step program because I read the steps in the back of the magazine. When I read the big book, I related to everything. It was like the book had been written for me. I actually fell to my knees in my cell when I first read the third step prayer. It was my white light moment. I wasn't the same man anymore. A week later, I was let out of isolation and moved into the general population. I walked out clutching my one bag of worldly possessions of what was left of the mess of my life and faced a wall of tough guys sizing me up. Some came right up to my face, almost daring me into what exactly I will never know. Luckily, I saw a piece of paper on a table nearby with the letters AA on it. It was a sign-up sheet for meetings inside. Within a week, I went to my first AA meeting. I had read the big book 3 times by then. The prison meetings were still virtual, and week after week, I looked forward to those guys' faces on the screens. Outside volunteers weren't yet allowed into the institution, but it didn't matter. They still carried us the message. At least half the time, our unit would be locked down and the AA meetings would be canceled. So I talked to the chaplain and started hosting small meetings with the guys in here myself. What a help that was. When I finally got out of prison, I couldn't wait to go to an in-person AA meeting. At the time, I was homeless and sleeping on my mom's couch. Going to jail takes everything away. I literally had nothing. I called AA and a guy told me about a meeting the following night. I stayed very close to AA and started to rebuild my life. I have now become friends with some of those nice AA folks who bring AA meetings inside the jails. Jail was the perfect alchemy of my brokenness and my nothingness. I believe my recovery was divinely inspired. I went looking for jokes in Reader's Digest and got a grapevine instead. I see my life through the lens of AA now, and I never had that perspective before. Finding AA in jail gave me the same feeling that first drink gave me when I was 13. I may be out now, but I'm still very much in AA, where I'm safe and protected, and my soul can breathe again. Moving on, the next story, Riding Shotgun with God, by Rose B. of Kyle, Texas. I began my journey in sobriety in 1997 after several false starts. I had been blaming my drug addiction for my problems, but every time I drank, I broke out in cocaine and handcuffs. I had resisted the idea of being an alcoholic, but I finally accepted that I was allergic to alcohol, and that was my primary drug of choice. This time was different. For the first time, I felt that bottomless pit of hopelessness and surrender in the center of my heart. My eyes began to open and focus. I believe that my first 90 days really began the night I got on my knees crying my heart out, confessing defeat, asking God to please not let me drink. I do believe I had taken steps 1, 2, and 3 that night. But even still, the next morning, I found myself back at war and once again hauled off to county jail. In lockup, I began doing morning and evening prayers, readings, and going to AA meetings. I began to believe in God, but I never sat still long enough to experience and internalize and absorb that still, quiet voice of the universe that the birds, bees, and trees rely on. Even when I did ask God for help, I only trusted in myself because I wouldn't give up control. I didn't know how to identify or access that power I saw others rely on. I thought God was just a sidekick. I feel like a miracle happened when I was sentenced to 9 months instead of several years in prison. I begged to enroll in treatment. An old AA friend from my last treatment was with an AA group who brought a meeting into the unit. She began to write me through the Bridging the Gap program. Just seeing her sobriety gave me hope. I learned so much about my behaviors in treatment. I now live by the acceptance page and the serenity and third step prayers. When I was released from jail, I was so afraid of relapse that I requested to attend aftercare. This time after going home, I chose to be self-supporting, declining my mother's car until I could pay my own insurance and maintenance. I also got a full-time job. I finally became willing to accept suggestions as a tool and not a weapon of criticism, and I got a sponsor to help me. I learned to take the steps off the wall and put them into my life. I even got to take AA meetings to that jail in the very same room where my mother would come and visit me on her walker. I now suit up and show up even when it's uncomfortable, and I insist on experiencing a happy, joyous, and free life in recovery. Today, I'm riding shotgun with God. Well, that's the end of part one of the June edition of the AA Grapevine, the magazine of Alcoholics Anonymous. This edition will be continued on part two. Once again, my name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.